We're holding in the middle of Chof Gimel Amud Aleph. Line begins Kalim. We covered now the first couple of the chumras that Kodesh has over Truma. We're now up to number four. Kalim Anigmar and Bataro. We said that if you have a keli that was finished. Actually, this is no. We're past the fourth already. This is already the sixth one, really. Kalim that were manufactured, where the manufacturing was completed in a state of tara, that you still need to you need to total them before you use them for kodesh. You don't need two for truma. We have to ask Gemara. It says the Gemara man. When we say that they were finished being made, who finished making them? Ilem de Gemara chaver. If you're saying that a chaver finished them. And what do you need even for Kodesh? Why would you need a tovel for? What's the concern that there might be any Truma on them? Or you're telling me that an Amaretz finished processing them? What do you mean? How could you call that it's finished for Tara? And Amaretz is Tomei Midrabanan. Amar Rav Bashila, Amar Rav Masna, Amar Shmuel, Lo Olim Gamrinu Chaver. No, we are actually talking about that a Chaver finished manufacturing the Keli. So what are we concerned about? Why are we saying that for Kodesh you need to tovel it? The reason is because we're concerned that the saliva of an Amaretz might have fallen on it.
I mean, why?
Well, you know, you would assume there might have been an Amaretz around, let's say, while it was being finished. And the point is, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that the saliva might still be wet when it's finished is being processed, and at that point it would be metame. Tosfos actually says that on the face of it, we don't even necessarily need to say that we're talking an Amaretz per se. We could be talking about, just like we said in the Mishnah, that the clothes of people who are tahor for eating truma are still considered midras as far as people who eat kodesh. By the same token, then you could have somebody who eats truma is standing over there. A little bit of his saliva falls, or let's say when he's talking, you know, sometimes people talk very forcefully and a little bit of saliva sprays out. That would also be considered for purposes of Kodesh. That's on a lower level. So he's not an Amaretz per se, as in said, but still, he's only on the level of Truma, not on the level of Kodesh. Tosfos talks about it. And then Tosfos talks about the question: what about, why don't we say, even if it was an actual chaver, somebody who is tahor for kodesh, but still you have, when it touches it with his hands, it'll make his hands shneis, etc. Tosfos talks, gets into that. But anyway, So lo'ilim gamino chaver. So chaver finished making the keli. Mishum tsunera dama aretz nafal. But we're afraid that a little bit of saliva of an amaretz had fallen on it. Now the question becomes aimless: when would the saliva have fallen on it that you're concerned about? If you're telling me that it fell before he finished making the keli, what's the problem? It's not a keli yet. It's not a kabbal truma. You're telling me after he finished it, the chaver is going to be very careful that no saliva or anything that would make a tomei falls on it, because he knows he's going to be using it for kodesh. So when is there a concern that you might have that saliva will fall on it and therefore it'll become tomei? The answer is, we are talking about before he finished making the keli. So then at that point, he doesn't think to be careful because it's not a finished keli. It's not makabel truma yet anyway. The problem is, maybe when he finished making the keli, the saliva is still wet, just like we have the case the other day with the woman who came to Rabbi Shmuel where she had wetted the thread while she was weaving, and then there's concern the saliva may have still been wet by the time it reached shalosh al-shalosh. Similar concept. So that's the concern. Now, since it's a very far-fetched concern,
if the
keli is finished and it's still wet, because saliva is not saliva, even of an actual zav, is not matame after it dried. It's only matame as long as it's still wet. So that's the concern. In other words, so at 2 o'clock, at 2 o'clock the saliva falls on it. 2:05 he finishes making the keli. At that point, the saliva might still be wet. No, that's it. The saliva itself is tamei midrabanan because the saliva of an amara. Yeah. So now the chaver won't have thought to be concerned about it because at 2 o'clock the keli is not finished yet. Anything that falls on it is not a concern. But the problem is it may still be wet afterwards. Same thing as that woman with Rabbi Shmuel, where she didn't think there was a problem until Rabbi Shmuel pointed it out to her.
Okay.
Well, so that's why. Since it's a far-fetched thing, we're not going to say it for Truma, but we will say it for Kodesh. And that's why we're saying it's one of the chumras that applies only to Kodesh. Actually, we said this is the last one of the group that applies also to Kalim for Chulin Shanasu al Paras Kodesh. Now, Gemara points out Tevila ain head of Shemesh Loi. Now, the implication of the Mishnah is that when this happens, when this happens, you have to tovel the keli, or whether you know that saliva fell on it or not, you have to tovel it to be on the safe side. But you don't need a head of shemesh. You don't need to wait until nightfall for it to become completely tar. Which, if it had become tamer with a truma deraisa,
anything of a keli.
No, we're talking in this particular case when we're saying kelim and gmorim b'tahara, that when you have a keli that you finish manufacturing b'tahara, we're saying you need to tovel it. Once you tovel it, though, you're allowed to use it right away, which would not be the case if it became tamer with a truma deraisa. If it became tamer with a real truma deraisa, if saliva from an actual zog fell on it, for example, or an actual sheret touched it, or what have you, it would need tevila and it would need head of shemesh. What we're saying is, here, since it's only midrabanan, then it doesn't need head of shemesh. Before, there was a tosfos a couple of days ago on Daf Chaf Aleph that went there, a long tosfos that went through all the various details when we say that a truma deraisa needs head of shemesh and when not. So this is one of the examples we're saying that not. Which the implication must miss into like Rabbi Eliezer. That means that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer. It's not. We learn in a Mishnah in Parah. Shreferes shechas cholachatas, a tube made from a reed that you cut it for purposes of chatas, meaning for parah adroma. This is, we're talking about a reed, like if you think of a piece of bamboo. The inside of a bamboo stick is hollow. Well, actually, I mean, there's this whitish stuff sort of in there, but you can...
Interruptions.
So you have interruptions. That's the key thing. Because it has interruptions, so all you have this white moch kind of stuff in it, so you take that out, and then you have, because of the interruptions, you have a usable little keli in between, where the one segment and the next. So Rashi says you can use it to hold paradrum ashes. So like after the fact, after when you want to take paradrum ashes to mix them with water, you can use something like that as a keli for that purpose.
Bamboo is
wood. Yeah. So it can become tamei, yeah. Other Mephoshim talk about the idea you might be using this piece of bamboo like to collect the ashes right after the parah adroma was burned, or maybe you're using it like to poke around in there, whatever it is. It doesn't matter exactly, but you're using it for some purpose having to do with parah adroma. So you cut it for that purpose. You cut it to make it into a keli for chatas. Rabbi Eliezer omi yitbo miyad. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to tovel it right away. You don't have to first be metameh, you just tovel it. Rabbi Yeshua omi yitameh b'achkach yitbo. Rabbi Yeshua says first you make it tameh, then you tovel it. We learned way back in Yuma, and now the Gemara, we learned way back at the beginning of Yuma, and the Gemara is going to discuss now also the concept that everything that is involved with the parah adroma, we want it to be tvul yoim. The Kohen Gadol himself, who burns the parah adroma, should be a tvul yoim. The kelim should be tvul yoim. The idea is, as we're going to talk about in a minute, the tzedukim, or actually right here, Rashi discusses it, the tzedukim had the idea that the parah adroma has to be done by people who are completely tahor, not tvul yoim. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is, since the Torah uses the special expression of a tovah v'mayim ish tahor, implies that people who have been working with the parah adroma up until that point can have a degree of tumah on them, which is they can be tevula yoyim. So because of that, because of this problem that the tzedukim davka held that has to be done b'me'urvei shemesh with people who are completely tahor, therefore to demonstrate not like them, the chachamim deliberately made a takana that everything involving the parah adroma should be done by tevula yoyim. And the kelim should be tvul yoim as well. So because of that, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, and as we learned back in Yuma, in turn, because of that, now that creates a problem. If you do, you're having everything being done by tvul yoim, that may cause people to think, you know what, the details of tumah v'tahara by the parah adroma are not so important. Because of that, that's why the Chachamim made all these extensive gzeiros on top of gzeiros. But when it comes to parah adroma, in order that people should be very, very careful with the tumah v'tahara of it, which is why we said, for example, in the previous parak, that even people who are tahor for kodesh are still considered tameh as far as parah adroma. They can't work with the parah adroma unless they actually tovel for that purpose.
people know how to differentiate why these are kind of were made, really, between contradicting the psukim or really to preserve the Torah?
What do you mean? I mean, these are two different takanas. One is you do by tevula yom, and the other is, even though it's tevula yom, but everything else, you keep a very, very high standard of tahara. We had, for example, in Sukkah, the business about the little children who were raised in these special courtyards. They never became tamei, and then they were sent down to the shiloyach on doors on the top of oxen in order that there's no possibility that they ever become tamei, that kind of thing. So anyway, so here Rabbi Eliezer is saying you can tovel it right away, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying first you make it tummy, and then you tovel it. Va'avinanba, and now when we learned this in the Beis Medrash, the Chachamim, the Amoraim considered this, they asked about it. D'chas chaman, again, we have to ask, who exactly cut this piece of bamboo for this purpose? Ilema d'chas chachaver, if a chaver cut it, lomali tvila, then why would Rabbi Eliezer say you need to tovel it? Tovling it has no effect. You can't say that tovling is going to demonstrate to the tzedukim, look, it can be done by tevula yom. Tovling it is the equivalent of just throwing it in a swimming pool. You're not accomplishing anything.
Because
the chavar is already tahor. Yeah. The el of the chos ka ma'aretz, and if you're telling me that an ma'aretz cut it, again, then the question is on Rabbi Yeshua. B'chol limit Rabbi Yeshua, yitam of yitbol. How does Rabbi Yeshua say you first make it tamei and then you tovel it? Ha'tamei v'koyi. It's already tamei from being touched by the ma'aretz.
People will not do anything.
No, fakir. Rabbi Yeshua doesn't have to say yitame, because if the Amoret cut the piece of bamboo, it's already tame. So you don't have to specially be matame it again. So either way, it's like we said before, in fact, we're talking about the chaver cut it. And again, the concern is saliva of an Amoret that might have fallen on. That is why we say that you have to tovel it. Not just because of the possibility of the saliva. Now, again, the question is, Amos, when would the saliva have fallen? Ilema mekamed lachaska, if it fell before he cut it, halav manahu, it's not yet a keli until, it's not a keli until you take out all the white, all the whitish, the pit inside it. Ve'elabasa lachaska, after you cut it, mizazaribar, you're going to be very careful with it. Now, even though, what do you mean you're going to be very careful with it? You still have to be metame, if we said, but you're going to be careful from other kinds. You're going to be careful. You don't want other kinds of tumas to be involved. You do need to be metame. We'll talk about it in a minute. But you're not going to get careless with it. You want to make sure, in particular, I think the Tura Evan or somebody says that or Siach Yitzchak says what we mean is mizah zorim, but you're going to be careful that it doesn't touch things of kodesh. So the answer is, again, la'olam b'kamei d'lachascha, we're talking about that the saliva might have fallen on it before you cut it. But again, like we said before about the kalim, duma b'idna d'chascha dain lachahi, that maybe when you cut it, the saliva would still be wet. Same idea.
Same idea.
The point is, the reason we brought this in is to demonstrate, therefore, our Mishnah is evidently not like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is saying you tovel it right away. In other words, it's already considered tamei, even you don't worry about saliva or anything. When our Mishnah is saying that there's a concern with Kalim and Igmorim Batara that you have to tovel them, evidently that's not like Rabbi Eliezer, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, you tovel it right away. There's no issue of tuma first.
The other case is wait until Kili is finished.
Yes. Now, the Gemara asks another thing. Bishleim l'Rabbi Yeshua, ha'inu di'ikah keiru l'tzedukin. Okay, according to Rabbi Yeshua, then, if we're saying that you first have to make it tamei, then we understand, once you make it tamei and then you tovel it and you don't wait for head of shemesh, then we see from that, oh, you know what? Sorry. The proof that our Mishnah doesn't go according to Rabbi Eliezer is that according to Rabbi Eliezer, we're saying that he's saying Yitbel Miyad, that it's already considered Tomei, whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua, we only consider it Tomei if there's a concern of Tzinor Adam or to the saliva. Yeah. Yeah. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, hello. According to Rabbi Yeshua, we're saying you Matame, you Tovel it, and then that's it. No hair of shemesh. Haino de'ikah keir l'tzedukin. Then we understand that that's, by doing that, you're demonstrating that you're not acting like the tzedukin. Mishnah, as we learned, and as we said before, Metamin Hoyu as a Kohen Asoda for Zapara, they used to deliberately make Tomei the Kohen Gadol usually, who burnt the Parah Adroma, Lahotzi Miliban Shal Tzedokim, in order to deliberately demonstrate against what the Tzedokim think. They said the Parah Adroma has to be done by people who are, has to be burnt, handled, and whatever, by people who are Urve Shemesh, who have already had head of Shemesh and are completely Tahar. The Halacha is not like that. So therefore, when you make the Kohen Gadol Tomei, or when you make this piece of bamboo Tomei, yeah, then you tovel it, and you don't wait for Head of Shemesh. You've demonstrated that you're not acting like. Now it's true. I mean, the Tzedukim are not necessarily going to hold the kind of Tumah that you did to make the Tomei anyway. But still, at least you're demonstrating that you called it Tomei. You did something that to our way of thinking makes it Tomei, and then you're using it without Head of Shemesh.
They're saying what? They're saying
because the Tzedukim don't accept the whole concept of Tumah of an Amoretz, for example.
Rabbanan,
yeah. How b'chol, when we talk about that they're Matame, then, by the way, there's two different opinions how they do this. One is that they actually are Matame by touching a dead sheret to the Kohen Gadol or something, a Tumah Veraisa. The other possibility is that, no, we don't go that far. We just have, Tosfos talked about it at the beginning of Yomah, what we do is we have the other Kohenim who have not prepared themselves for Parah Adroma lay their hands on him.
What?
On the Kohen Gadol. Or in this case, on the piece of bamboo. And since they're not Tahor for Parah Adroma, then they make it Tomei Midrabanan. Midrabanan is one of these Milas, as one of the Milas of Chassas. And then therefore you tovel it and use it without a hair of Shemesh. Tosfos had brought over there in Yoma something from the Yerushalmi that one time one of the Kohenim Golem who was getting ready to do a Parah Adroma was a Tzedukah in the times of Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai didn't want so the guy prepared himself and had done a head of Shemesh. Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai didn't want that. The whole point is we have a takana or not. So he goes over and he puts his hands on him. Oh, you're a great guy. You wonderful Kohen Gadol. We're so happy to be having you do this. And now the guy has that. And then tell him now. You know what? Now go tov. Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai touched you. Eli amet ba'alma leiber in and head of Shemesh. But if rather you say that we just said that our Mishnah implies that you don't need a head of Shemesh in general for kelim anigmar and b'tara, all you need to do is tovel them and then you can use them immediately. Then the question becomes my hekera l'tzukinika. That according to Rabbi Yeshua, in what way are you demonstrating that this would be any different because of the issue with the tzukin? Either way, kelim anigmar and b'tara, the chaver completed a b'tara. The only possibility is the saliva of an amoret. You're saying in always, whether for Kodesh or for Chatas, you tovel it and you use it right away. So how is there a difference between Kodesh and Chatas? How are you demonstrating to the Tzedukim that you're treating Chatas differently? Amarav, after Ur Ketamei Sheret. Because what they did is, in this case, what we're saying is, we consider this bamboo not as if it was just touched by the saliva of an Amoret, which then, yes, it wouldn't need head of Shemesh. We consider it as if it actually became Tomei by literally having been touched with a sheret. No, but we consider it Tomei to that degree, in the sense that Rashi says, for example, if something else were to touch this, we would consider it a rishon Tomei. If we considered it that it was touched by the saliva of an Amoret, then it would only be a sheni. But because we consider it as if it was touched by a sheret, we're considering it a rishon. If it touches something else, that makes it a sheni. Nevertheless, we're saying that we can tovel it and not do head of Shemesh. There is the heker. It's true, as far as what you're actually doing, you're doing the same thing either way. But in one case, you're considering it a sheni, and in one case, you're considering it a rishon. And nevertheless, you treat them both the same. You tovel them and you don't do head of Shemesh.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. The Tzedukim may not realize it, but people who are in the know will know. Question is, Elamei Afteloi Tatame Odom. Well, then by that logic, if you're saying that you're considering this piece of bamboo as if it was touched by a sheret, meaning that it's now a rishon l'truma, then it should not be able to be metame a person who touches it. Because a vlada truma, a rishon or below, cannot be metame a person or kalim. It can only be metame food and drink.
Only an av.
Only an av or aviyavai satruma, yeah. Aloma Tanya, so why do we learn in a Braitha? Chos Chol Makbila Tovel Tvila. That the one who cuts it and the one who tovels it himself has to tovel. Which means, in other words, that it is making him Tomei. It sounds like we're treating it as an Avatoma. You're right, the Gemara says, Ella after work it's me mess. Right. Let's change our answer. Not they make this bamboo the equivalent of a rishon that was touched by a sheret. Rather, they make it the equivalent of something that was touched by a tamei mei. Now, there is actually machlokes rishonim. There's a concept the Gemara discusses in a few places called cherev harei kacholol. The Torah, when it discusses the din of tumah v'tara in by the parah adruma, it uses the expression over there cholah sheyiga, anybody who touches al pnei asada b'chalal cherev, by somebody who was killed by a sword. Now it doesn't matter whether the person was killed by a sword or any other utensil. So we learn a concept from that called cherev harei kacholol. The sword has the same din as the corpse itself, just like the corpse itself is an avia voice atroma, and it will be able to be metame something, anything else, a person or kalim or whatever, and make it an avatroma. No, minasera.
Sword will be the same thing as the avatroma.
As the avia voice atroma, which is the corpse. What happens when you have it? When you have a dead body, if a kali touches it, that kali becomes an avatroma. That kali is now capable of making another kali or another person tame as a rishon atroma.
Right.
And so forth, and then it goes from there.
And a sword.
No, what we're saying is the cherev is considered. The cherev is considered an avia voicha truma. Now there is a machlokas rishonim, which is the same as a mess itself. In other words, you can go 2 degrees away from it, and a person can still become tamei from it. Now there is a machlokas rishonim whether this applies to only to metal utensils, or whether it applies to. Let me rephrase that. Sorry. No, it doesn't become an avia voisa trauma, but it becomes an ava trauma. The fact that the keli that killed the person or that touched the person becomes an ava trauma, and itself is able to be metame odom and kalim, just like the mess.
But not people.
No, it can be metame people or kalim. That's an ava trauma can do that.
Avia
voice is more than that. The mess is called avia voisa trauma because it's capable of making something else an ava trauma. The question is, does that apply only to metal utensils, or does it apply to any? The Rambam holds it applies to any. The Ravid holds it only applies to metal utensils. Now, our Gemara here is talking about this piece of bamboo, which is a piece of wood, being able to be metame a person, when we're saying asur kitzme mess, that we make it the equivalent of something that touched a mess, that we're saying, therefore, it's able to be metame a person, some mafoshim say, see, this proves the Rambam's point. Even though it's a piece of wood, a piece of bamboo, nevertheless, it's still considered an avatruma. Whereas according to the Ravid, it shouldn't. According to the Ravid, it should only be a rishon l'truma. Other mafoshim deflect that and point out that even from this gemara, you don't really have a proof. You don't really have a proof to that. Because not so much because it's incidental, but because we're going to go on to say actually that it's mitame the person because of the dinim of parah adruma, really, not because of the general rule of cherev harei kacholo. So the question is, ihachi, if so, if you're really saying that this piece of bamboo has the din as if it touched a mess, and therefore it's an avatruma, ihachi, tiboy hazot shlishi yoshvi, then we should say that it actually requires to be sprinkled on the third and seventh day with parah adruma water. Alomatanya, so why do we learn in a braisa? You don't choscho matvila to and tvila. You cut it and you tovel it, and then you need to tovel. Tvila ein hazot shlishi yoshvi. So it needs to be tovel. It doesn't actually need to be sprinkled. If it's an avatruma, if it actually touched, if it's the equivalent of having touched a mess, why not? Ela asa'ur kitzmei mess v'shvi shalai. So no, what we mean is we consider it. It is like an avatruma, but we consider it as if it's an avatruma that already went through the sprinkling, that only needs to be totaled at this point. So therefore, that answers all the questions. So therefore, it can be metame a person who handles it. Because it's an avatruma, or we outright consider an avatruma according to the Rambam, or according to the Ravid, it may not be an avatruma per se, but still it's metame a person because of the din of paravruma. But nevertheless, you don't actually have to sprinkle it because we consider it as if the time of sprinkling already passed. Actually, the Rashash has an interesting idea about this that he says. He wants to say that in general, if you were to have a keli that touched a mess and then went through the sprinkling on the third and seventh days, and then a person touches it, he wouldn't need to be sprinkled himself. He'd only need to dip in the mikveh. Yeah, that's what he holds, based on this gemara, based on some other gemaras. By the same token, he says, let's say you had a keli that touched a mess and it was already sprinkled once on the third day, and then it still awaits to be sprinkled on the seventh day, and then a person touches it. He only needs the seventh day sprinkling. He doesn't need both. Some of, he holds that way, and some of Farshim bring proofs for some achronim bring proofs for what he says, but others disagree with him and say that no, there are clear gemaras elsewhere that say not like that. Anyway. Okay, now comes the question, though. You're telling me you want to consider this piece of bamboo, which was prepared for Parah Adumah, and then you have to table it. You want to consider it as if it became tameh by a mess, and therefore we're saying it will even be tameh the person who handled it. But we learn in Braisa, even though, as we said, the Chachamim made many, many milos and many xeris and whatnot, as far as the Tumah V'Tahara of the Parah Adumah, they didn't make up something. They didn't make up a completely new din. When it comes to Parah Adumah, what we do is we take the usual dinim of Tumah V'Tahara and we extend them. But we don't create something entirely new. For example, there's a din by Parah Adumah. In general, we say we count Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, etc. By Parah Adumah, we really don't. There's no such thing as levels of Tumah when it comes to Parah Adumah. If you have, you know, item A touches B, which touches C, which touches D, etc., all of them will still have the same degree of Tumah when it comes to Parah Adumah.
Meaning
they'll all be a Rishon or whatever it is, Tumah. We don't count degrees, unlike with everything else where we go only as far as Revi or Shlishi or what have you. So that kind of thing we do. But to create something completely new, a whole completely new category of Tumah V'Tahara, that we don't do. So what are we saying? We're saying we're making a whole new category for this piece of bamboo that was prepared for the Parah Adumah. We're declaring it kind of a new kind of Tumah that we don't really find anywhere else, where it became Tumah Mess, that already was sprinkled with Parah Adumah water, therefore it's still an Ava Tumah and it's Metameh a person, but nevertheless it doesn't actually have to be sprinkled. Where do you find such a thing? Abaya says, what we mean when we say they didn't make a new thing by Parah Adumah means Shalai Omru Kurdam Matame Moshe. It means, for example, that Chachamim did not go so far as to say that, for example, an axe or something else that's not meant for sitting on should become Tomei by a Zav. In other words, normally, we, as we've had many times already, that you have the concept of midrash azav, that's something that's meant for azav, something that's meant for sitting or lying or whatever on. If azav sits or lies or leans or whatever on it, that becomes tomei, even if he doesn't touch it. And then obviously it would be tomei as far as the Parah Adumah, it's tomei for all purposes, really. We don't go so far as to say with Parah Adumah that we're going to apply that even to kalim that are not meant for sitting on, because that would be something completely new. But to say that we take something to say that we take something that's able to become tameh, which is like this piece of bamboo, and say that and say that even though it didn't actually touch a mess, we consider it as if we did, that we don't have a problem doing. What do we mean? Kedetanya, the pasuk says va'yoshev al akli, that when if a zav sits on a keli, it says it becomes tamei. Yachol kafa zav yoshev aleh. You would think this means if a person overturned a saw measure and sat on it, or taukav v'yashav aleh, or a half a saw measure and sat on it. Taukav means trei v'kav, it means two plus one kavim, three kavim, a half a saw, because saw is six kavim. Yehei tomei, you would think that measure becomes tomei because he sat on it. No, tamad laim v'yashav aleh kli, asher yeshiv olav, the pasuk says, only if he sits on a keli that he sits on. Yitmam, the extra words, asher yeshiv, I'll teach us. Mishim yuchad liyeshiva means a keli that's specifically meant for sitting on. Yotza, zesha, I remember Amud v'nachim al-Achtenu, as opposed to in this case where people would tell him, get up, we need it to do our work. And this is the
we saw that.
Yeah, we've had this a number of times already. The whole parak Shlosha Trisenhain is built on this basis. The whole parak that Avelim learned is based on this basis. Shalosh, what's the first one over there? Shlosha Trisenhain, for example, there's three kinds of shields. You have the one kind, the three-sided one that soldiers use in battle, and they also sometimes sleep on it when they're out in the field. That kind is Tomei Midras. Then you have a kind, Shemsachun Bebekunfun, a smaller one, which is only meant for like fencing. Nobody would use it for sleep on, and if somebody did use it for sleep on, people would tell him it's sort of roundish. Yeah, it's not three-sided. So it's one of those amod v'nasim alachteinu things. It's not meant for sitting on. Therefore, it's not matama midras. It's only matama tremes. And then you have the small kind, the little frisbee-like one that the Arabs use over there. But disavian is torah miklum because it's not really a functional keli, and so forth with all the other ones in that pair. So that's that then. So the conclusion we have is that this is why you have this gzera about kelim anigmona b'tara, that even though the keli was completed in a state of tara, you still have to tovel it for kodesh, and for chatas, but not for anything lower than that, because of this concern that saliva of an amaretz might have fallen on it, and it's still wet when the keli is finished, and therefore we say we apply that to kodesh, and we, in general, with and with chatas also, and with chatas also we apply that concept. The difference is with chatas we're considering it might we consider as if it had a higher level of tumah. Nevertheless, we still say all you need to do is tovel it. You don't need a head of shemesh in order to demonstrate against the tzedukah. And you can use it immediately. And by Kodesh, you don't need a head of Shemesh for a different reason, just because Kodesh is not as severe.
We wouldn't say all this.
Right. For Truma, you wouldn't need to tovel it at all, yeah. Next one in the Mishnah. Hakli mitzaref masha b'seichel kodesh avalo l'truma. We said that a keli combines together whatever is in it for kodesh and not for truma, which means, as we said the other day, if you have, let's say, a pan with a bunch of slices of cake or something in it, when it comes to truma, if a sheret touches one of them, for example, the piece it touched becomes a rishon, the next one becomes a sheni, the next one becomes a shlishi, and that's it. It doesn't go any further. The rest of the pieces of cake in the platter will be tar. Whereas with kodesh, we're saying,
together, how do you know which one is?
If you're able to tell. I mean, if you're not able to tell, that's a different matter, but we're talking about if you're able to tell. Whereas by kodesh, we'd consider it's all as if it's one big thing, and all of them become tamei. Minah hanimili. Now, how do we know this? Which the Gemara is asking this. The Gemara didn't ask this about any of the other ones, because the other ones, it's clear or older Rabbanon. But here, we're going to have an opinion, Reb Chanan, who says that it's actually Daraisa. Amr Reb Chanan, Da'omakra, Kaf Achas Asara Zahav Malei HaKetoris, the Pasuk says, by the Karbonis of the Nesim, one spoon weighing 10 shekels of gold, Malei HaKetoris, full of Ketoris, which means, HaKos of Asara, L'chol Mashav HaKaf Achas. The word Kaf Achas, what do you need Achas, teaches us everything, all the Ketoris that's in that spoon is considered as if it's one unit. And the Meshech Chachma points out that the point is, unlike with the other kelim that the Nesi'im brought as well, you have Karas Kesef Achas, what's the lashon over there? Karas Kesef Achas Shloshim Meishkola Mizrach Echad Kesef Shivim Shem, etc. But by those it uses by those you have it mentions the first one over there Karas Kesef Achas. First it mentions the material Kesef, then it mentions the number Achas. Here it's the other way around. It mentions the achas before mentioning even the material, the asara zav. So therefore we can learn from that that the word achas is meant to teach us something extra, which is this idea that everything that's in the spoon is considered like one unit. Also, he talks over there about the difference is that with the mincha, there's no chiddush because the mincha is mixed with oil, and the oil would connect it all into one thing, whereas here you're talking about ketores, which is a powder, and nevertheless you're saying it's all considered one.
But it's not really separate.
Each grain is separate, but nevertheless we consider it. Masiv Rav Kahana, so Rav Kahana asks them, if you're telling me that this is Daraisa, we learn in a Mishnah in Adius, Hosif Rav Akiva, Hasolus Vaktotus Valavona Vagacholim, Rav Akiva added, we'll quote the first part of the Mishnah in a minute, but Rav Akiva added the cases of the flower of a Korban Mincha, or Totus, Valavona, and the incense that was put on top of a mincha, or the incense that was brought together with the lechem upon him, v'hagecholim and cold, that all these things shem nagel tzvul yom mitzase pasul eskola, that if tzvul yom touches some of it, he's metame all of it, because the cleaves metarif. The point is that the point is v'hadra that combines it all together. Even though the tzvul yom only touched one particular coal, for example, nevertheless all of them become tame.
Because the kli
combines it all, yeah. V'had rabbanon he, and we see that this must be the rabbanon mimai midkatoni reisha, because the first part of that mission also talks clearly about something that's the rabbanon, namely heid Reb Shimon b'Seira al efechatos. Reb Shimon b'Seira gave edus about the ashes of the paradumah shenaga hatomei miktase, that if a tomei touches a little bit of it shetimei eskuli, that he metame all of it. But katoni hoisif Reb Akiva, and that says that Reb Akiva added. Now, this whole concept that we've been talking about, that the Parah Adumah has a higher standard of Tumah, a higher standard of Tara, rather, is only the Rabbanon. Because we said, because of the issue with the Tzedukim. As for Midaraisa, there's no reason that Parah Adumah has any higher standards than anything else. This Pasuk, Kaf Achas Asara Zahav, is talking about Kodshim. These are the Kalbonis of the Nesiv. It's not talking about Parah Adumah. There's no source in the Torah to say that ashes of the Parah Adumah, we should consider it all as one unit. If Reb Shimon ben Beseira is saying we do, obviously that must be the Rabbanan. If that's the Rabbanan, then when it says Hoisif Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva added the case of the flower and so forth, must also be the Rabbanan. So the whole thing is the Rabbanan. What kind of Deraisa? Two things, by the way, about this. First of all, we're talking about things like ashes and coals and whatnot. How do those become Tomei anyway? They're not food or anything.
They cannot become Tomei, actually.
We said they are becoming Tomei. We said if Tzvul Yom touches one of them, right, everything in the spoon or in the container becomes Tomei. The question is, how are they becoming Tomei? They're not food. The only things that can become Tomei, on the face of it, are people, food and drinks, and Kalim. Ashes and coals are none of the above. The answer is, Rashi says, you have a concept called Chibas HaKodesh. The fact that Kodesh is so precious and so important to people, that makes it considered, it makes these things considered as if they were food. And therefore they can be Metame. Therefore they can be Mekabel.
What's the logic?
That's the logic. Chibas HaKodesh. The fact that you consider them so important allows you to consider them as if they had the importance of food. We're going to have later on. Even though they're not food. We'll get to tomorrow also, there's a similar concept that Chibas HaKodesh makes it, that even, we have this in Sochem as well, I think, that even Kodesh that has not been Mukhtar the Kabbal Truma is considered as if it was. And Kodesh that never became wet with any of the Shiva Mashkim can nevertheless become Tomei. Similar idea of Chibas HaKodesh. The other thing is, Tosfos has a bit of a discussion over here, which coals are we talking about? In general, we learned in Yuma normally a Kohen would use a large silver shovel that holds four kavim to scoop up coals from the mizbeach for the everyday kseretz. Then he'd pour it into a golden one that holds three kavim, so about a kav of coals would spill onto the floor. They'd sweep them up into the amma over there, into the water, and then he'd take the three kavim of coals in and use them to burn the daily kseretz. As opposed to the Kohen Gadol, we said on Yom Kippur would use a three kav one of gold to begin with, and use that very same one to go into the Kodesh Kedashim. And we said the reason is because we don't want to use gold every day to scoop them up because it'll wear it out. A Torah Chosan Amamon and Shay Yisrael. And conversely, though, we don't want the Kohen Gadol to have to go to the trouble on Yom Kippur of pouring from one into the other. We want to make the thing easier for him. It's fast day, so therefore we allow him to do it with all with one. The question is, if we're talking about the coals of every day, then what do you mean they become Kodesh? What do you mean they became Kodesh in the Keli? Then what are you throwing them on the floor? What are you letting some of them fall on the floor? So therefore, the Yerushalmi talks about that this that we're talking about, this din, that all of them are Kodesh, and if a Tzvul Yom touches some of them, he passes all of them, is Zavka talking about the ones of Yom Kippur, where none of them are so spilled on the floor? That's one way of looking at it.
The ones that you
take a certain size and you bring that one in, there's nothing to spill on the floor. No, and then he takes that in and uses that to burn the Kodesh in the Kodesh Kedashim.
And it stays burning in the Kodesh Kedashim.
You remember, we learned that the Kohen Gadol brings in the pan of ashes and the pan of coals and the spoonful of Kodesh.
Right. He
puts the Kodesh on the coals, we'll be saying this, the Shabbos and the Seder Havodah, and he leaves it in there till the room fills up with smoke. He leaves. He comes back later in the day and then takes them out.
And then what does he do with it?
That's the point they can be disposed of. The mitzvah has been done, yeah. Anyway. So that's one way of looking at it, or it could even be talking about the ones of every day, but we're talking about the ones that stay in the pan, whatever. Anyway, the bottom line is, Rav Chanan is saying that this whole concept of the coals and whatnot, that if some of them become Tomei, then all of them become Tomei is Midaraisa. And we see from that Mishnah in Adi, it's evidently it's the Rabbanan. Yeah. Amar Shlokish Mishrim Bar Kapara, L'nitzrucha Elo L'shtiore Mincha. Right, but when we say that Rabbi Akiva gave his Edus, which implies that he's talking about something which is Rabbanan, he wasn't talking about the flower from the original Korban Mincha. You're right, that Minatoro we apply Rav Chanan's pasuk and we would say that it's considered all one. We're talking about the leftovers. After the Kohen takes out the Kohenetz and burns it on his Beach, the rest of the Mincha that's in the container is eaten by the Kohenim.
The Shiore Mincha.
Now, Daraisa, midaraisa, we would say like this: sorich lekli, only whatever still needs a kli, hakli mitzarfei. Then the kli combines it all into one. So the original kohen mincha, as it is before the kohen mitzvah is taken out, needs to be in a keli. That's where you make it. You put the mincha in a kli sharis, and that's what makes it into a kohen mincha. It makes it holy. So therefore, it needs the kli. So fine, then they would say that the Kli combines it all into one, and therefore if somebody was Tomei or Tzvul Yom or what have you, touches a little bit of it, then all of it becomes Tomei.
And the
Shiarim. She'ain Sarach L'Kli. The Shiarim don't have to be in a Kli anymore. As a practical matter, they may be in the Kli because you haven't taken them out of there yet, but they don't have to be. and Kli Metzarfer, then Midaraisa, the Kli would not combine them. But the Rabbanon came along and made a Gzera, that even if it doesn't need the Kli, then the Kli still combines it. That's what Rav Akiva is saying in that Mishnah. Maybe because of Chibas HaKodesh, or maybe whatever the reason is, that the Rabbanon didn't want to make the distinction between whether it needs the Kli or not. As a matter of fact, there are actually different Mephoshim about what exactly it means, Tzorech L'Kli, whether it means that it needs the Kli in order to be Kodesh, or just that it needs to be in a Kli right now, even though it was already made Kodesh in a different Kli. Because, for example, the spoonful of Ketores, it becomes holy, actually, the Siach Yitzchak talks about this, the Ketores, for example, you don't need to put it in the spoon to make it Kodesh. Right when you're grinding it up, in the mill that they grind it up in is a Kli Sharis already, and it becomes holy in that. Then you just put it into the spoon. So it needs to be in that spoon because that's how you bring it.
Stay Kodesh?
No, not to stay Kodesh. You bring it in the spoon because that's a practical matter.
Right.
That's the din, how you're supposed to bring it in, to put it on the Mizbeach.
But it's Kodesh, right?
But it's Kodesh already from before that. Yeah. Anyway. So that's the thing. So you can have Daraisa, there's this concept of Tziruf Kli, but nevertheless, the Rabbanon still had to extend it to a case that wouldn't be covered Daraisa.
Sure.
Okay, question is, Tenech Solas, fine, that explains the case of the flower. Ketores Levona, Mayuk Lamema. What are you going to say about Ketores and about Levona? Where do you have a case with those where they don't need to be in a Keli? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avor, who mentioned Sovereign, Amar Rav Kartabla. Suppose, for example, you were to take this Ketores or this incense and pile it up on a Kartabla. Kartabla is a leather mat. Like they used to use them in those times for like tablecloths or whatnot. Now it's flat; it doesn't have sides.
Incense.
Yeah. So you take the spoonful of incense, for example, and instead of carrying it in on the spoon, you put it on a flat utensil. And before we talk about, are we talking about one which is a cliché or so not? Anyway.
Flat utensil is made of what?
It doesn't matter. Well, here we're talking about cartabla, which would be made out of leather, but it could be anything. The point is, Daraisa, Yesh Laitech Mitzaref, Ein Laitech Ein Mitzaref. The Din Daraisa is only when you're talking about something that has a receptacle, like the spoon, Kaf Achas. So only when you have something that's in a receptacle will we say that it's Mitzaref. Ein Laitech Ein Mitzaref. If it doesn't have an inside, if it's flat, then it's not Midatara. But also, Rabban Vatiknu, this is what Rabbi Akiva is adding. That even if you have it piled on a flat surface, nevertheless, Yesh, Da'afagav, Ein Laitech Mitzaref.
What did Rabbanan do there?
Same idea. Maybe they didn't want to distinguish so much between whether it has a toich or whether or not. Maybe because of Chibbutz HaKodesh, or maybe, yeah, well, could be. Now, the Gemara points out, this that we said, that Rav Chanan says that this din of Tziruf is Daraisa, this argues with what Rav Chiya Ba'aba says. The Amr Rav Chiya Ba'aba Amim Yechanan, yeah. On the contrary, our Mishnah says, Hakli Mitzaref Mashiva Soichu, this is based on Rabbi Akiva's Edus. In other words, there came the Mishnah in Edus. Rabbi Akiva came in front of the Sanhedrin and gave Edus that Hasolus Vaktoris, etc., that it's Mitzaref. Based on that, they wrote our Mishnah, which says that this then applies across the board in Kodesh. Which means the whole thing is Dirabana, not like Rav Chanan says it's Daraisa.
On Rabbi Akiva's
based on Rabbi Akiva had said ages, yes. There's two ways of looking at it. In other words, according to Rav Chanan, the din in our Mishnah is Daraisa. According to Rav Chiya Ba'aba, it's Dirabana. It's based on the Mishnah in ages. Next, the next thing the Mishnah had mentioned, Harbi Bakodesh Pasul, that the fourth level Tumah is Tomeh by Kodesh and only Shlishi by Tumah. Which, you know, Rushin touches something else, it becomes a Sheni. Sheni makes a Shlishi. Shlishi makes a Ruvi, as far as it goes by Kodesh. Tanya, Omer Rav Yosi, Minayim Ruvi
Bakodesh.
By Truma, it goes to Shlishi. And by Chatas, by the way, that's what I was saying before. By Chatas, there's no limit. By Chatas, a Rushin touches something else, it still stays a Rushin. So that touches something else, it's also a Rushin, and so forth, indefinitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because by Chatas, you want to be careful. Right. Tanya, Amar Rav Yosi, Minayim L'Ruvi B'Kodesh Shu Pasul. How do we know that Ruvi is Pasul by Kodesh? And again, let's clarify our terms. We mentioned before that the Gemara uses the word Pasul when something is Tomei, but not capable of making something else Tomei. It's called Pasul. The word Tomei is reserved for when it's able to make something else Tomei. Ruvi is as far as
it...
Right, so Ruvi is as far as it goes by Kodesh. So therefore, we call it Pasul. As opposed to, if it was a shlishi, we would call it tamei. We would call tamei. So minayim l'reviva kodesh or pasul. Yes. The reason is b'dinhu. We make a kavah chaymer. Uma mechusa kipurim.
Where are we getting it from?
This is, we're getting it from a kavah chaymer, we're saying. Uma mechusa kipurim shemutu b'trum apostle b'kodesh. If we find that a mechusa kipurim, somebody who has already tovled, has already had a head of shemesh, but has not yet brought his korbanos, he is allowed to eat truma. We learned it from a pasuk. We'll have it in a couple of months in Yavamos. He's allowed to eat truma. Nevertheless, post-pasul b'kodesh. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to eat kodesh because again, there's a pasuk that implies that until by a yodas it says that until she brings her korbanos, she's not fully tahor in the sense of being able to eat kachim. By a yodas, by a woman who gave birth. The relevant psukim are as follows. By truma, the Torah says in Parshas Emor that the a kohen who becomes tamei nefesh hashtigabai v'toma ad orev v'lo yoichem an akodshim, and he's not allowed to eat kodshim until he goes to the mikveh uva hashemesh v'toher, and then it says v'achal yoichem an akodshim, then he can eat from the kodshim. Now, what do we mean by kodshim there? The Gemara explains what we mean there is truma.
We call it
kodshei agvul. It's something holy which is allowed to be eaten anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, by a yodas, by a woman who gives birth, the Torah uses the expression. It says after she has her 40 or 80 days of yemei, or 33 or 66 days of yemei tara, whatever. Then over mlois yemei tara. At the end of that, then she brings her korbanos, and then the pasuk says v'chiper ala kohen v'tahera. The kohen makes kapara for her, and she becomes tahor. So she's tahor, in other words, in a sense that she wasn't until now. Up till now, she was a mechusa kippurim. She was allowed to eat truma all this time, during all these 33 or 66 days of the Yemei Tahara, but she was not allowed to eat kodshim. Now that she brings her korban, she's allowed to eat kodshim. That's the point. In other words, so we see even min haTorah that kodshim have a higher standard than truma. There's a case where somebody is allowed to eat truma, but not allowed to eat kodshim.
I think she would have to take off.
She has to tovel after the 7 or 14 days. Then during the next 33 or 66 days, it's called the Gemara calls it Tvulas Yom Aruch. It's like she's, instead of being a Tvul Yom only until that night, she's a Tvul Yom until the end of the 40 or the 80 days. Anyway. So we see that min haTorah, there is something in which kachim are stronger and more severe, more stringent than truma. So by that logic, shlishi shepasul b'truma ain't a din she yaster reviv l'kodesh. So if we find that by truma that a shlishi is pasul, which we're going to quote a pasuk in a minute to prove that, ain't a din she yaster reviv l'kodesh. Isn't it logical that we should say that it should be more stringent by kodesh that you need a reviv? Okay. Now Rashi points
based on
the fact that kodesh should be more stringent than truma.
Should have a
review. Now, Rashi points out there's a problem with that. We have a general rule with a kavah chomer that says, Daye levomen adin lias kinodin. It means when you want to make a kavah chomer from this to that, you can't make this, you can't make the that, you can't make the chomer more severe than the cow you're learning from. So in this case, if you're learning from Truma, which has a shlishi, then you should say Kodesh has a shlishi, fine. What makes you say it should have a review? The answer is, Rashi says, you don't apply the rule of Daya when it's going to break apart the whole Kavah Chaymer. If you do that, you don't have a Kavah Chaymer left. The whole point is we're trying to show that Kodeshim have a stringency over Truma. So therefore, we have to say that that's what the Kavah Chaymer is telling us, that you still go beyond, that you go beyond the case you're learning from, beyond Truma, because otherwise there's no sense in having the Kavah Chaymer in the first place. So that's how we know it. So when it comes to Kodesh, we can learn min haTorah that there is a shlishi. And when it comes to Ravi, as we just said, we have a kavachomer. What's the pasuk shlishi l'kodesh min haTorah minai? And how do we know that there's a shlishi in Kodesh? How do we know this min haTorah? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'habasar asher yiga b'chol tamei lo ya'achol. The pasuk says the meat of a korban that touches anything tamei may not be eaten. What does that mean? Anything tamei? Mi lo yaskinen d'noga b'sheni. When it says that it touches anything that's tamei, that could include a touched food that was a sheni, or drinks that were a sheni, really, because minatari you need, it goes back and forth from food to drinks, but whatever. In chulin, sheni is as far as you go. So therefore, if the Torah is saying b'chol tamei, it doesn't just mean that it touched an ava tuma or a rishon l'tuma, even if it touched a sheni l'tuma. Something that touches a sheni l'tuma becomes what? A shlishi. V'ka amarachman alo ya'achol, and the Torah is saying that kodshim cannot be eaten. So that proves that there's a concept of shlishi by kodshim. From the word b'chol tamei. Ravi, mekavachomer hadamara. And as we just said, you have a kavachomer to say that on top of that with kodshim you even have ravi. Now, there's in a number of places, Rashi talks about, we mentioned this the other day, that Rashi talks, and Rashi and Tosfos discuss in a few places, is this thing about Revi Bakodesh, is it actually Doraisa or not? On the one hand, we're saying we have a Kavachomer over here, which sounds like it should be Doraisa then. On the other hand, it seems like kind of a weak Kavachomer if we have to, you know, we have this business of Dalia, but we're not paying attention to it because it'll break apart the Kavachomer. So Rashi in various places talks about, in some places Rashi talks about that it's Doraisa. In some places, including over here, it seems that Rashi holds that it's actually Dirabanan. In different places in Shas, when it discusses the whole concept of Shlishi and Revi. There's some places where, including over here, where Rashi implies that it's Dirabanan. And even though we're mentioning this Kavachomer, nevertheless, it's really Dirabanan. This Kavachomer is kind of only an Asmachta. And Tosfos argues with that. Tosfos discusses and says that no, it really is Doraisa, at least in some cases. Yeah.
Still arguing on that you have to limit the Kavachomer.
Because the fact is, but we're not limiting the Kavachomer, but also they have other arguments as well. You have a case, for example, that we mentioned before, that for example Levoina is able to become Tomei even though it's not food because of Chibas HaKodesh, so therefore you get into that as well. And you have cases Tosfos says where it seems fairly clear that you can have a Revi. Where you can have a Revi, which is Tomei Doraisa. And therefore, across the board, when we say that there's a concept of Revi by Kodesh, then that would be a Doraisa across the board. This would be, according to Tosfos, one of the examples where the Mishnah is mentioning something, even though it's mentioning it among a bunch of Dinim Dirabanan, this particular one happens to be Doraisa. Just like, according to Rav Chanan, the previous one was also Doraisa. Yeah.